My guest at this time is Dr. Vance Ginn. He is a senior economist at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, where he also directs the Center for Economic Prosperity. We've asked him to weigh in on the recent volatility on Wall Street, as well as this week's government funding deadline. And by all accounts, our federal government will keep right on spending at Obama-era levels more than a year into a Republican administration. And Dr. Ginn, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg. It's great to be with you.
Let's start on Wall Street. It is never fun to watch the Dow dropping several hundred points or even 1,500 points as it did for a while there on Monday. So what's your general analysis as we begin here? Are prices just simply greatly exceeding the value of stocks at this point? Is this a normal correction? Is it algorithms going nuts? What are we seeing here?
Well, Greg, I think you hit on a lot of them. There could be a combination of those. but when you look at the highs in the S&P 500 on January 26th, we're off about 8%. And so we're near correction territory, which is 10%. And so the question, like you're getting at, is, okay, what's driving that? 80% of businesses have come in above expectations on their earnings for the fourth quarter. So you would expect, you know, greater increases in the stock market as well. But there's also anticipation of faster economic growth, higher inflation, and some of those things are starting to contribute to an increase in interest rates, which slows in economic growth and reduces the money supply in circulation that has driven down the stock market.
You're right. There's certainly some factors at attention there. We've seen a little bit of uptick in interest rates. So why is inflation such a risk right now?
Well, I think part of that is from the economic growth potential from the tax cuts that were passed, and people are already starting to see an increase in their pay. And so as they see an increase in their pay, they like to spend more, and that increases demand. And without the increase in supply, which I think we will see from increased production from businesses, that would increase inflation. And overall, look, the Federal Reserve has increased the money supply quite dramatically over the last decade from quantitative easing and everything else. And so you're seeing inflationary pressures from that monetary factor as well.
How do you gauge the length and depth of a downturn? How do we know when this correction has officially corrected itself and it's safe to buy and perhaps add some more?
Wow, that is a tough question. knowing when to execute is very important, as you can find out from any financial expert. I'm an economist, not necessarily a financial expert, and so whenever I look at these markets, I like to look at the overall trends and to try to see what the fundamentals are of the economy. To me, when you look at the economy, the fundamentals are strong. The last three quarters of last year, average 3% growth. That's the long-term growth rate of our economy over the last 100 years, compared with the 2.1% growth rate during the worst recovery since World War II under the Obama administration. So things have started to look, you know, turn around from the economic front, looking at regulation reform, tax cuts. And so the economy seems to be fundamentally strong. It's a question of what's going on with the stock market. And I think a lot of that has to do with the tightening of the Federal Reserve actions and this increased interest rate potential moving forward.
Let's talk about a couple other economic issues in the remaining time that we have here, Dr. Ginn. As you well know, February 8th is our next deadline to fully fund the federal government, or else we'll get a partial shutdown just like we did last month for a couple of days. In addition to the immigration policy questions that are lingering out there and whether that will be tied to funding or how that particular legislation will get framed, what seems to get lost a lot of times here is that we're still spending at Obama-era levels. There was a continuing resolution last April that essentially kept things the same. Then President Trump made the deal with Democratic leaders in September that kept things pretty much the same. Then we got it again in December. We got it again effectively, in addition to renewed funding for the health insurance program in January. So what is the impact of staying at this high of spending levels for this long?
Well, Greg, I think you hit on it. What it seems like they're doing is continuing to try the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. It seems like that definition is insanity. And that seems to be what we continue to have in D.C. I mean, the way that the tax cuts package was put in place, I think, was an overall boost to economic growth, lowering the corporate tax rate from the highest in the developed world at 35% down to 21%. But look, even from a static analysis, you're talking about maybe a $1.5 trillion increase to the debt over a decade. From a more dynamic model from the Tax Foundation, they showed $500 billion. The key is the driver of deficits and debt is spending. We don't have a revenue problem. As you know, we have a spending problem. And so we've got to get the spending under control as quickly as possible. This would be a great opportunity to do that. And I know the president has put out some good ideas when you're rolling back some of the funds going to the EPA and some other areas that are out there. But we've really have to have congressional action. And this isn't going to just take cuts in spending. It's really going to have to, at some point, be reforms to quote-unquote entitlement programs to really bend the cost curve so we don't have massive deficits in debt year after year after year.
Speaking of massive deficits, we just got some projections, as I'm sure you've seen, from the Treasury Department that we're going to be pretty close to trillion-dollar deficits this year and possibly into the future. A lot of people are blaming that on the tax cuts, but that's a $1.5 trillion price tag over 10 years, so $150 billion a year, which doesn't necessarily add up in the math. So yeah. What do you chalk up this basically doubling of the deficit this year to? Is it a combination of the tax cuts and an inability to tackle spending, or is it more than that?
Yeah, I think it would be a combination of those. And when you look at the amount that's added from the tax cuts, I mean, it could be as low as $50 billion a year if you look at just the dynamic scoring of that. So I'm not sure the $150 billion is quite right. But at the end of the day, it's really based on spending. And we, you know, the Congress hasn't taken an opportunity here and the multiple before this to restrain the growth in spending over time. I mean, we have some examples. What I like to look at in the work that I do is what states do best. And when you look at the Texas model of low taxes, relatively less government spending, and sensible regulation, what we've been able to do in Texas is to pass conservative budgets that don't increase by more than population growth plus inflation. Actually, it's been less than that. It would be great to see the day where Congress can do that. And that would help it to live within taxpayers' means over time. The government doesn't have money. Only taxpayers are redistributing that money to the government to do whatever else they is that they're going to do with it. And there are certainly roles for government, but let's make sure that they are effective in what they're doing and that they are there only to preserve liberty and nothing more.
We're talking with Vance Ginn, senior economist at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. This is probably more of a political question than an economic question, Dr. Ginn, but when you look at the fact that we're still operating under Obama-era spending levels, is it because of Democrats gumming up the works, or is it because a lot of times politicians would like to cut spending, but they know they're going to anger a lot of people with whatever they cut, so they ultimately shy away from it?
I think it's more of the latter. Unfortunately, you see, you know, in my economic sort of modeling and research, you look at rent seeking and the amount of that goes on. I mean, when you're looking at the next election cycle, you want to get reelected. And so it makes it very difficult to make those tough choices to cut spending for interest groups that are there often with their hands out. And at some point we need to say, well, what about the taxpayer? And that's who we really need to look at. How is the taxpayer going to have to pay for these over time? If we continue to run up massive deficits, as you said, maybe closer to $1 trillion this year, that means future generations are going to have to pay more in taxes. Currently, the national debt is around $21 trillion. That would push it up to $22 trillion, $23 trillion. If you add in unfunded liabilities from Social Security and Medicare, we're over $100 trillion in debt. So we have these massive problems. There's some good things, I think, short-term when you're looking at the economic growth potential from the tax cuts and allowing for individuals to keep more of their money along with the business tax cuts as well. But there's certainly a lot of work that needs to be done on the spending side.
Last question for you, Dr. Ginn. A lot of debate over the impact of the tax cuts. Republicans obviously see this as a major victory. They're excited that people are getting these $1,000 bonuses from a lot of different companies and perhaps $2,000 in savings for the typical American family. Democrats like Nancy Pelosi and others say this is essentially crumbs for the American people compared to what the corporations are getting. What does your analysis show? How much of a difference does that type of money make for the American family?
I really think that, you know, any dollar that a family can keep in their pocket compared to government whenever they're excessively spending is a boost to not only what they can put on food on their table, save for college, save whatever it is, save for a rainy day, but that's really important when you're looking at economic growth potential and economic activity. So whenever I hear that $1,000 in a family's budget is crumbs, then I also think about, well, what are the states that they're living in? If you're in California, $1,000 may be crumbs, but if you're in Texas, that's actually a lot of money. So let's really think about what those policies are that are driving up the cost of living to where $1,000 is merely crumbs. And a lot of that has to do with progressive policies and not the conservative fiscal policies that help you to keep more money in your pocket and have lower cost of livings around. So I think overall, more people will see more money in their pockets. It's great that so many businesses are paying out bonuses. And at the end of the day, this will end up being a good thing for America and for Americans.
Dr. Ginn, we'll call time there. Thank you, sir, for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Vance Ginn is senior economist at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. He also directs the Center for Economic Prosperity at the foundation. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.